Welcome to Day Zero Update for January 14th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, it's 2024 now.
Yep.
But yeah, we are finally back after a bit of a delay due to a, not really a personal issue. It's a whole thing where there was a fire at my apartment building.
Yep.
Technically, that is true, though. Technically, it's four buildings connected to each other, though you can't get from one to the other without going outside.
Yeah.
But my building was essentially on the opposite side of where the fire started, so everybody had to be evacuated. I was at work, so I didn't have to do anything but see a text and wonder what the hell was going on for 5 hours after that. But everybody got out fine that was there. No injuries as far as I know, just loss of property, and that stuff can be replaced. So I'm in a temporary place, hopefully for only a few weeks here, for the time being, where I've recorded podcasts and such before. So everything should be all right. But we got stuff to do this week. We got some news, not too much, but we'll be ending the show talking about our games of the year. We'll talk about our individual ones, Chris and Brandon here.
Yep.
And we will be dealing with all that. Then talk about the overall one, because there's maybe a couple games on there that aren't on either of ours. But we'll do all that stuff at the end. But we got some news leading up to it for that. And yeah, that's be fun. But before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing over the break, the extended break. And I have been playing a decent bit of stuff. There's the Prince of Persia, the Lost Crown demo that just came out the other day, which is on everything, I believe, PlayStation, Xbox, PC, and Switch. Supposed to run pretty well on all of them. And on my PS5, it seemed to do pretty well for itself. And yeah, it is a Metroid-like.
Yeah.
But with the within the Prince of Persia universe, you do not play as the Prince of Persia. Basically, the prince has been taken by somebody that is probably doing evil stuff, and you are one of the immortals that has taken to protecting the, you know, the royalty and all that. And you go to this area called Mount Kaf to try and figure out what's going on, likely something bad. And yeah, you're kind of let loose in this demo. I don't know if it's the, it's probably the beginning of the game, but they seem to imply that they kind of have custom lined up stuff to give you things to do more than maybe what the way it goes in the full game. I don't know. But yeah, it's pretty well done. Very combat focused, with kind of more going on with the combat than you might expect. Because there are, you know, side-scrolling, essentially. But you have, you know, your sword combat on, like, square. Triangles for your bow for a little more ranged combat. You have a melee or a parry. You have a dodge that you can kind of dodge. You can also, if you're holding it in any direction, you kind of slide. So you kind of do that with an attack at the end to kind of do a kick up to kick an enemy up into the air, kind of do some air combo stuff. And they have a whole amulet system that you can equip various ones to give you, you know, more health, more melee damage, add, you know, an extra attack to the end of a combo kind of stuff. There's pretty good range, and you can seemingly buy stuff from merchants along the way. So they got a lot going on here to kind of customize things a bit to the way that you want that stuff to work. So it plays really well. The platforming is pretty well done. Right away you get a dash. Again, this stuff might be locked a little bit further in, but up front you get a dash. I think there's going to be a double jump, because it feels like there's some double jump areas I've run into. But the cool thing it has is when you run into sort of stuff you can't unlock right away, you can essentially take a screenshot to put on the map, so that when you hover over that area, it'll show you like the screenshot of that area. So like, oh yeah, there's that thing there. That's a thing I can go do now. So you know, work your way over there, that kind of stuff. So that's one of the cool things it has. It also has some accessibility stuff for like making combat a little bit easier, some of the bow stuff a little bit easier, sort of auto aim, that kind of stuff. But they do have a bunch of difficulties as well. So you can just use the easiest one if you want to take a little easy on yourself, that kind of stuff. But definitely recommend checking out the demo that is out on everything. So I'm probably going to pick up that game on Thursday, I think it is, the 18th. So that looks neat. It's a $50 game. So one of the a smaller game that Ubisoft has put out in a while, especially for this franchise that has been kind of, I don't know, sitting dormant, even with the Sands of Time remake that they announced a few years ago that they never got out. And that is, they got pushed to another developer and started over from scratch to figure out like what's going on there. But we got a new original game that's got a nice style to it. So, yeah, this looks really neat. Kind of in the, maybe in the vein of like a Metroid Dread, but, you know, not on a Switch. Exclusively, at least. So yeah, there you go for that. One game I've been playing a bunch during the holiday break here is Spirit Hunters Infinite Horde. That is a Vampire Survivors clone, where some of its hooks is that it has a huge skill tree to sort of slowly upgrade your characters and such and unlock new abilities and what they call mods that are kind of the equivalent of evolutions for your different abilities, that kind of stuff. And yeah, I've been putting a bunch of time into it. I unlocked a hardcore mode, which is like in the Diablo sense of you start a new save and keep playing until you die and then you lose all your progress. There's a trophy for getting a certain amount of upgrades on the skill tree in hardcore mode, which I think I've gotten to about, like it's 100 you need, and I got about 60 before I've died. So I need to get better. It's the side effect of having stuff upgraded pretty well so that you can kind of just not play with yourself paying too much attention and then starting from scratch and continuing to not pay that much attention and letting yourself die stupid deaths like that. So that's a fun thing I've been dealing with. So there's that. Let's see, there's Death Must Die. I got this in the Steam Winter Sale. This is another Vampire Survivors clone, like one of the more recent releases that people have been getting into. The way it works, it is kind of a mix of like Hades and Vampire Survivors a little bit, where it has the thing where you get your upgrades, and from time to time, one of the gods shows up to like talk to you about that. And give you some encouragement or whatever, whatever they're going to talk to you about. Often the people are done in a very sexy way, outside of the underage girls that are representing, I forget what they are. I don't know that they're tied to any religion or mythology kind of thing. They might be, but kind of the conceit I think is that death has, run amok, and so you are on a path to try to kill him. But along the way, you know, you're running around killing enemies, getting upgrades, upgrading your character, and trying to accomplish things. They give you some quests that are kind of like the stuff you do in Vampire Survivors and all that kind of stuff, but they kind of make it more explicit and give you, you know, progress bars so you can kind of better tell how you're doing with that stuff. And I think I've unlocked a few characters so far, but it also has loot, persistent loot that drops. So you kind of keep that stuff going. You get a chest to put excess stuff in if you want, kind of in a Diablo 2 or a Path of Exile kind of system where you have a limited amount of space for that stuff. But they're not too punishing about it from what I've seen. And you can sell off the weaker loot that you want to, and you can use that to buy stuff from the merchant, which could be more loot or other things. So it's got some nice stuff about it. Maybe the one knock I have is some of the writing, where some of the characters, despite the kind of attitude of the game being kind of darker and more serious, there are characters that have speaking style that is, or it's like a text speech that your characters have. And like the first two you unlock, one of them talks like they're texting people.
Yeah.
With like that kind of shorthand. And the other one uses essentially emoticons, like the text version. So, you know, like a colon and the backspace to be, you know, like a an eh kind of thing, you know, that kind of stuff. Where I'm like, this doesn't really fit the game, at least the attitude that it has most of the time. Whereas if characters did that in like Vampire's Fireworks, you'd be like, yeah, sure. Because that game doesn't take itself seriously at all. This one seems to be doing more of that. But yeah, that's maybe the one knock I have against it. But that's been pretty fun to play. Let's see. Yeah, over the holidays, I streamed some stuff, and I streamed through Lake's DLC called Season's Greetings, which takes place a year earlier with you taking control of Meredith's dad. I think it's Thomas is his name. Where he is, you know, doing the paper route like she does the in the main game. But, you know, he's kind of been considering, you know, retiring and maybe moving out of Oregon, I think they're in. And so, yeah, they're kind of waiting for, is like the day, like a couple days before Christmas. So they're waiting for their daughter Meredith to come into town to celebrate the holidays with them. And then... spoilers, kind of find out that she's not going to make it.
Yeah.
So they try to make do with the friends they have in town, with which there's maybe a little bit of drama to that. So drama that's, you know, is not like anything high stake. It's like, oh, somebody may be making a life choice that means they'll be leaving town. That kind of stuff, as well as dealing with a news crew that gets stranded during the winter storms that are coming in, and very much being led by the on-air talent, who is a snob and doesn't think too highly of this small town, but they're trying to do reports on small towns, so they end up doing one for this. And that kind of ends up being the like credits you see at the end of the game, which is a pretty cool touch there. So, yeah. That's a really nice DLC. Maybe about 6-7 hours of it there. But yeah, very fun time for that if you like the first game or the base game. So definitely recommend that. And then, yeah, the next game here, I got this the other day because I saw it came out on PlayStation. It's a collection called Yeah, You Want Those Games Right, So Here You Go. Now Let's See You Clear Them. This is a collection of, if you've seen ads in mobile games, there are often certain types of like puzzle games that they advertise that those are not actually what those games look like or play like. May not even be the type of gameplay that they have. But this is a collection that spoofs those ads and be like, you know, hey, did you ever see ads like this of games like this and you wanted to actually play that? But not enough to actually download the game that is being advertised. And it's like, all right, they made this nice little $10 collection for that, which includes, I'm trying to double check what that includes. Yeah, there's the beakers full of different colored liquids that you're trying to, you know, move around to fill up the specific one, you know, make them all fill up entire beakers as you go. And so that's a fun one. There's like a parking lot one with cars that is essentially a slide puzzle kind of thing. There's one called Pinpull, which is those that you see like a knight that wants to get this treasure, but it's covered up, you know, it's blocked off by these pins. That kind of stuff, but there's also an enemy there, so you can have to figure out how to pull these pins in order to take out enemies and let your hero, survive or get the treasure or whatever it is. That kind of thing. There's the number ones where you see these towers of enemies with different numbers on them. You got to choose which one to have your hero attack that has a lower number than the one you have. So that you then combine the numbers, and then that allows you to attack another tower, and then you kind of keep moving on, and occasionally ask you to do some math, like multiply that number by two, or divide, or subtract, or add numbers to it. So it's a pretty simple concept there. And the last one is called Cash Run, which is a weird game where it's kind of almost like a platformer, but played from kind of a three-quarters perspective, almost behind the back. But where you're collecting this cash that you use to build stairs over obstacles, and then keep kind of hitting the button to lay down some to get over gaps, that kind of stuff. Those are kind of the five type of games there. The Cash Run's kind of the worst one that I've seen, the least interesting, because it requires kind of the most precision to it, not necessarily is as much of a puzzle thing as the other games are. But yeah, from what I've played of these, they're all pretty solid. Though they kind of go easy on the difficulty for this stuff. So I've, done like the color lab one with the different color liquids, and was doing some of the first ones, and I happened to have all of them unlocked, so I jumped to the last ones and was able to complete them pretty easily, even though I've skipped over, a bunch of, progression of how that stuff works. But some of them are pretty simple to play through for that stuff. So, yeah, that's a collection that's been out on PC and Switch since last summer, but they just released on PlayStation this week. So I grabbed that, $10, pretty solid game. There, maybe the one knock I have against it is that it does not have a platinum trophy. There, it just has like 11 trophies for essentially clearing all the stages in each game type, and then clearing them all with 3 stars on them, which is all time based. I think the Cash Run's score based, but all the rest are time based, and then just one for getting an absurd amount of gold coins that you get for completing all the stages. So I'm going to have to look up a guide for that one if I'm going to go for all these. But yeah, it's been a pretty solid collection. And then the last one, Fortnite, which I've been playing a good bit of. What did I do? I got the Ninja Turtles recently when they had those up, all 4. So I've been mostly playing with those skins, kind of hopping around from the Fortnite Festival.
Yeah,
rhythm mode, which still doesn't have, you get maybe like 10 songs or total as you go. You kind of unlock some stuff to play that are sort of Epic made ones, but they put some up as featured that change like once a week or something like that. But it's like, here's a Machine Gun Kelly song, or, you get a Imagine Dragons song, which I played on hard on the bass and can't even get a max combo with how few notes there are for that kind of thing. There's like some songs like that where they have absurdly easy instruments on them. But yeah, not really too much in the way of great music there without having to spend money for it, which is like $5 for a song. And it's like, no, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to buy it in Rock Band. But yeah, I've been playing a little bit more of the Lego mode, which is pretty neat. I've gotten to the point of having an extra character that hangs out in my village and having to build out a space for that and all that. So that's pretty neat. And I've also been playing a good bit of the Battle Royale mode.
Yeah.
Doing pretty well with that. But yeah, the one issue I've had of late is that this game is really buggy. In the Fortnite Festival mode, have had times where I set up my playlist. You do up to 4 songs for a session, and then it's I go to start and it just errors out and makes you do it all over again. That kind of thing. Or it just outright crashes in the Fortnite Festival or in the Battle Royale mode or in the LEGO mode. It just likes to crash a lot. And I even moved over from PlayStation to Xbox to just double check if that was a PlayStation thing or not, and still happened on Xbox. And so I'm like, all right, this game's just very buggy and kind of sucks in that way. So, but yeah, that's been pretty much all I've been doing. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, my primary gaming, well, actually I will get to that because I actually started another game just recently that I forgot to talk about last night during the Let's Weekend podcast. It's a game called Void Stranger. And this is one of those games that I think is probably going to blow up really huge once like a big gaming YouTuber gets a hold of it, the same way that, you know, Fear and Hunger did, where it was kind of like this obscure cult hit. And then suddenly one or two, you know, streamers started playing it and it suddenly became this huge thing. I have a feeling this is probably what's going to happen with this game as well. On the face of it, it's very simple. It uses very sort of monochrome Game Boy-esque graphics. And essentially what it is you play this woman named Gray who, for reasons that aren't quite clear, you've gone to this dungeon that's like out in the middle of nowhere. And it's literally like a pit in the ground. There are no stairs to get into it. She literally has to jump into it. And in fact, when she lands on what is essentially the first floor, she loses like 3 of her hit points. And after that, eventually what happens is the game very slowly and very intelligently sort of teaches you how this game works. At first, the character of Gray herself, she's free moving. She can go in any direction she wants. She can go as, you know, from each area she wants. Then she goes down one or two floors because the essential sort of conceit here is that you're trying to reach the staircase of every floor to get to the next area. When she gets there, she reaches a chest that's next to this statue of a goddess-like figure. And inside of that is a staff. And after you get this staff, you are now essentially locked into a like tile-based travel system. You can go one direction. You can go another direction. You can go up, down, left, right. You cannot go diagonal. And when you travel in that direction, you are also facing that direction. So you can't, you know, turn from one direction to another when you're on one tile. You literally have to travel to another tile in order to do that. And once you get the staff, it locks you in place. What the staff does, you then go to the next room and you find out that there's this like unbreakable chasm that you need to get over to get to the next staircase. And that's when you find out what the staff actually does. What the staff does is it gives you the power to take one of the tiles that are on the room, take it out, and then you can place it in an empty space. And that's essentially sort of the major like conceit of this game. It's essentially a tile puzzle game where you are taking tiles from one area and then putting them in another area in order to traverse over chasms and obstacles and such. The other thing you can do is you can also push things, or in this case, it's more like punch them. And you know, if it's, you know, immobile objects, you know, like boulders or statues or whatever, and there are other things you'll find out that you can punch as well as the game goes on, you can push those objects, away. You can even, you know, push them into a pit and that will, you know, take it out of play. However, you're not alone in a lot of these rooms because there's also other enemies and monsters that are there with you. And these monsters all move. First of all, they only move when you move. So you move one space, they move one space. If you remain immobile, they stay immobile. And they all have like a recognizable pattern that you can ascertain if you're smart. As long as you're paying attention, you can avoid them. But remember, this is also a tile puzzle. So on top of, you know, dealing with these monsters, you're also dealing with, you know, taking tiles out and then putting them somewhere else. And remember, you cannot, you know, turn in a certain, in any direction while you're immobile. You have to move from one tile to another in order to get to another direction. So it's actually a lot more difficult than it appears at first. But what's very interesting about this game is it's one of those games where it seems very simple on the surface, but as you play it, more and more of the gameplay and the game world and the backstory slowly starts to emerge. The way you sort of save your place in this game is you'll come across rooms that have these large birch trees in them. And if you interact with those birch trees, you have the object to go and sleep, essentially. And what that does is it will actually not only save your place, it will also close out the game entirely. The game will just close itself out. And don't freak out. The game didn't crash or anything. It's supposed to do that. And what happens is when you come back to the game, it'll show you a moment from Gray's past, and you'll start to reclaim some of the memories that she's lost. And you sort of get like get more of the story of like, why is she in this dungeon? What has happened that has led her to this place? Why did she lose these memories? All this other stuff that's going on in the background. I am just predict me, mark my words, this game is going to blow up when somebody discovers it, because it's a legitimately great game. But yeah, outside of that, I've also been playing Pulse Man on my Nintendo Switch, because I got the, you know, the Nintendo online stuff, you know. Pulse Man's an old Genesis game. It's an early Game Freak joint before they made Pokemon. And once you play this game, you can pretty much see Game Freak's, you know, prints all over it. You know, the art style is very much Ken Sugimori's. The music is very much Juichi Masuda's. And in fact, there are bits and pieces of it that sound strikingly similar to bits you would hear in the Pokemon games later on. I would not... The way to play this game, it's very... tempting to try and play it like a Sonic game, because Pulse Man's whole spiel is that he is a superhero who can channel electricity, and he can either like do like a, you know, kick, or he can do like a regular standard electric attack, which is like a short length blast, sort of like a punch. But if he runs or dashes enough, he can build up like static electricity that he can use to turn it into like a projectile attack. His other conceit is that he can turn himself into electrical current, so you can use it to like traverse like these wires that are made for like pathways for stuff. And he can also go in and out of televisions, where he will then go into what's called the digital dimension. I will just say right off the bat, if you're a person who has issues with like sensory issues, or, you know, have like epilepsy or anything related to that, don't play this game, because this game is loaded with flashes. There is this one particular like casino level where the background is constantly flashing like reds and yellows and blues and oranges just constantly. And I don't recommend it if you have it. If you do not, though, I do highly recommend this game, because it's actually a lot of fun. And it's surprisingly, you know, varies things up a lot. It kind of reminds me of like old Treasure games. But yeah, I've been playing that. I also, because, you know, I was like, it's a Game Freak game, and, you know, Game Freak does Pokemon. And, you know, I haven't done Pokemon in a long time. I might as well give it another shot. And so I went and bought Pokemon Scarlet. And, you know, I'd already known that, you know, this game, it was a little more ambitious than the Switch itself could probably handle. And it definitely shows. I will say, a lot of like the glitches and stuff that people were talking about when this game first came out isn't really there anymore. I haven't really gotten any of those major like graphical hiccups or anything. I have, there is like a lot of pop-up, I will say that. But this is probably like the first Pokemon game I've played where like the actual like story is sort of interesting. Like, it's not like, we're not talking like Final Fantasy level or anything like that, but it's actually like kind of interesting, and I kind of want to see where it's going to go. But what's also interesting is the fact that I've encountered very few of like the iconic Pokemon in this game so far. I've gotten fairly a ways through it too. I've gotten a bunch of like gym badges. I've gone up against one of the Titan Pokemon. I've gone up against some of Team Star, who are like, you know, the gang characters of this type of this particular Pokemon game. And yet I have not encountered a single Pikachu or Charizard or Charmander or Lucario or any of those characters. I have come across a Growlithe. I have one in my collection. I have come across Meowth and Psyduck. And, you know, some of those, like the B-tier Pokemon. Not a single Pikachu I have found. Not even one. In fact, one of the gym leaders that I went up against specializes in electric type Pokemon. Not a single Pikachu or a Raichu or a Raichu, none of them to be seen. But other than that, I've also been playing Super Mario Brothers Wonder. I've already played a bunch of it because obviously we're going to be talking a little bit about it. It's on my games of the year, but I am amazed again and again how Nintendo can come back to this old Mario formula and find ways to reinvent the wheel again. Because I have no problem saying this is the best Mario game since Odyssey. Like, it really is that entertaining. But yeah, that's basically all I've been playing.
All right. So yeah, let's get to a little bit of news here.
Mm-hmm.
We get you caught up on subscription services news. Since it is still January, we have mm-hmm. your PS Plus monthly games for Essential and Up mm-hmm. members, and they got some good games here.
Oh, yeah.
All of these are for PS5, mm-hmm. Two are for PS4 as well. Yeah. But the big one here is A Plague Tale Requiem,
mm-hmm.
The sequel to A Plague Tale Innocence,
yeah.
Featuring the ensuing adventures of the very depressing adventures of Amicia and
Hugo,
yep. continuing traveling through the French countryside and mm-hmm. finding more awful things that are happening at the behest mm-hmm. of Hugo's powers that have reawakened and all the fun that comes with that. So that's one to check out. Looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun stuff there, but yeah, not a game to play if you're looking for a pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go for that. The second one here for PS5 and PS4 is Evil West. Mm-hmm. I believe this came out 2 years ago, I think 2022, and very much I've heard good things about it as a dumb action game kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very much like one of those like B-tier PS2 action games and yeah. PlayStation games that used to be a lot more plentiful back in the day. And like these are like the types of games, like they're not necessarily going to win any awards, but they're still a lot of fun.
Yeah. And yeah, this is one of those kind of games, not to be confused with Weird West. No. But
that game actually is like should win some awards. But yeah, Evil West is also pretty good.
Yeah. And this is very much a straight up shooter action game.
Yeah.
It's just blasting a bunch of undead enemies and such. Mm-hmm. With a Western tinge to it, but
yep.
Very much kind of dealing with a lot of that kind of fun stuff. So you're probably well off just putting it on the easy difficulty and just blasting enemies and having fun with that.
Yep.
I was trying to check what else these devs have made. Let me see here. Yeah, they made Trek to Yomi, mm-hmm. Space Punks, the Shadow Warrior games. So mm-hmm. that makes a lot of sense there. Hard Reset. Yeah. So
mm-hmm.
pretty much feels like that's in their vibe of mm-hmm. a dumb action game. So there you go for that. And also for PS5 and PS4, Nobody Saves the World.
Mm-hmm.
The newest game from Drinkbox Studios, makers of Guacamelee and the, the Blob, games. I forget what their full titles are, but they make a lot of cool, goofy games. This is a game that's kind of got a little bit of Zelda to it.
Mm-hmm.
but you are playing a nobody that is able to take on the forms of various creatures and such around the world to solve puzzles and get around and do, you know, different kinds of combat and whatnot to it. So that's a pretty cool game. I played a good bit of that. So that one's also worth checking out if you want that. And I guess the other thing they have here is a Warframe DLC pack if you want, if you play that game. Get some extra weapons, armor, and such for that to check out. So, yeah, there you go. Some good stuff there. And since we got delayed a little bit, they also announced the game catalog lineup that will be going live here on the 16th. And we got some good stuff here as well for PS5 and PS4. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, Next Level Edition, which is that's just what the bundle is with the PS5 and PS4 versions. Because they're one of those companies, 2K, that has to create special editions that include both versions. But
yeah,
that's the spinoff of the Borderlands series featuring Tiny Tina, and sort of a D&D-esque loot game. First person, you know, melee combat kind of stuff. Supposed to be pretty good from what I've heard, but I've not checked out that full game yet. So
yeah,
finally be able to here on Tuesday. Let's see. Also on PS5 and PS4, Resident Evil 2, the remake that came out a few years ago. That's supposed to be very good. So there you go. You can check out some of that for PS5. Hard Space Shipbreaker, a capitalism game. That's essentially you are a dude who's in deep debt and kind of sells, like, takes an offer to work on this shipbreaker job that then you find out you are essentially selling your body, your soul to this corporation, put in massive debts, like $1 billion+ worth, and you have to work that off by, you know, cutting apart ships and taking the different materials and sort of sending them to different collection bays and incinerators and such.
Yeah.
And watching out for, you know, explosive stuff within the ships and radioactive stuff and all that kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And along the way you deal with the abuses of a mega corporation and trying to set up a union and how the corporation tries to break that up.
Yeah.
And all that kind of fun stuff. But it's also a very kind of chill and relaxing game of just working through these ships, cutting them up. Getting the money off of them and kind of moving along to the next one.
Yep.
All the kind of fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one that's worth checking out. For the PS4 here, Lego City Undercover, that's the game that was a Wii U exclusive Lego open world game with voice acting and all that, that was very well done then. Still holds up pretty well, but you can check it out here on the PS4. Let's see. Also for PS4, Just Cause 3, which is a very good game. With some performance issues on a base PS4, but on a Pro and a PS5, it runs better with that. But this is where they got it to the edge of what they could do to make a Just Cause game fun, as they added the wingsuit that you might recognize in like a Spider-Man. Lots of explosive stuff. Not as much exploration to do here as in Just Cause 2, because they kind of more focus it around the story mode missions for getting unlocks and all that. Whereas in Just Cause 2, you can only have to do the first couple of missions, and then you can just go and take out the various towns and such and rescue them from the dictator on the island, that kind of thing. But they still have some of that here, as this is I believe supposed to be in his home island in the Mediterranean. So there you go for that. Let's see. PS5 and PS4. Session Skate Sim. This is one of those handful of indie games that were trying to do the skate thing.
To
be the simulation skateboarding game that kind of went away after EA was done making skate games. I believe this one might be the best of the bunch. I don't think any of them had the kind of runaway success or anything to it. But you can check this one out and see if that one works out well for you. For that. And then let's see, for the PS4, Shadow Tactics, Blades of the Shogun. This is like a hardcore tactical stealth game of sorts. This is a studio that has shut down if they put out their most recent game. I forget what the title of that one is, but I believe it's a studio called Mimimi. They put out their most recent game, which I've heard likened to kind of a top-down, like turn-based, maybe it's real-time kind of stealth game, like in the Hitman kind of vein of sorts, with the like freedom to tackle things the way you want kind of way. I heard it described in that way, and that sounded pretty neat. But yeah, this is I believe their first one of these games. So that one seems like one that's worth checking out.
Yeah.
Let's see, for PS5 and PS4 as well, there's Vampire the Masquerade Swan Song. This is sort of a narrative RPG of sorts. You deal with vampires that you're playing as, and not what Bloodlines is supposed to be, but I believe it's a bit more of a smaller budget, kind of more approachable kind of game. So that's when you can check out as you continue to wait for Bloodlines 2 to release or disappear again. And then last one here for the what is it? I'm trying to think here for the extra tier is Surviving the Aftermath for the PS4. I believe this is like a city builder kind of game, but set in a post-apocalyptic future. So, you know, you got scarce resources and all that kind of stuff to deal with as you're building your post-apocalyptic colony of sorts and dealing with rival bandits and all that kind of stuff attacking. So that sounds pretty neat. But that's for the extra tier for premium, the classics. They have a few here for the PS1. There's Rallycross, which was a pretty well regarded rally game for the PS1. So that's pretty neat. For a game that was on the PS1, Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. If you want to see how the games of that era tried to adapt a movie that was being still kind of held under lock and key of sorts. I'm sure these devs had some access to what was going to happen there, but I think they were also trying to keep that stuff under wraps so people didn't get spoiled on that stuff early.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are the PS1 games. They got some other remastered stuff. There's Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection for the PS4. So that's the collection of Street Fighter, Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 3, Street Fighter Alpha series, and the various releases between those games so that you can play online, local, whatnot. It's supposed to be a pretty good collection there with 12 games in it. So you can check that out. Then they got the two Mana remasters that Square Enix has done. Legend of Mana and Secret of Mana. I believe Secret's the one that's supposed to be the better one in there. But yeah, those are both kind of action RPGs. Kind of in the vein of a Legend of Zelda kind of thing. But doing their own thing either way. But yeah, fairly well regarded for both of those. So yeah, that's the classics that are only on premium, but yeah, pretty good lineup there of stuff. So yeah, you can play those Mana games before the new one comes out, whenever that is. That might be this year at some point, but yeah. There you go. Some good stuff. And then, yeah, let's get to Game Pass. This is going to be going up to this week. From the beginning of January. So let's see. They got available now, Close to the Sun for console and PC. This is, okay, this description doesn't, narrative driven steampunk adventure. So that could be interesting. Let's see. Hell Let Loose. I believe this is a multiplayer shooter set during World War II. It was on PC and the Xbox Series X and S. Play up to 100 players in battles. So got some nice scale there for that. So let's see. Console and PC, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. If you want to jump into a game that never wants to end, there you go for that. Kind of the generally regarded as the most underwhelming of the of that trilogy of games.
Yeah.
Not a bad game, but people played a lot of Origin and Odyssey, and then Valhalla was just, what if we did that, but even more? People are like, oh, geez, we've done enough killing people. What if we take a break? But you can check that out. Let's see, console and PC, Figment. It's an action-adventure game. Yeah, this is the one that has like a lot of like musical stuff in it. So that's neat. Let's see here. Yeah, console and PC. This is an EA Play game. So if you have EA Play on any of the platforms, you can check this out. Super Mega Baseball 4. This is the sort of arcadey baseball game that has a ton of customization stuff to it. And a lot of, I think this one has a bunch of actual players in it. So you can play with them mixed in with your original players. So a lot of stuff there. To check out, yeah, the last one here that's already out, We Happy Few. I think it's had some licensing thing that they had to take it down for a bit, but it's back up now. So you can see this weird kind of seemingly Bioshock-esque kind of game, but that's more of a survival, you know, crafting game kind of thing to it, set in like a weird alternate 60s England.
Yeah.
It's been taken down by drugs. People with drugs, like, taking over the city here.
Yep. It's the story is a little bit more complicated than that, but that is more or less the surface level story.
Yeah. It's got a weird narrative around this drug that controls people's emotions. Kind of thing. And that's how they keep the masses from revolting against the government, I assume, is the one that's doing the bad stuff. So, you know, fun things. But yeah, then on the 16th here, Game Pass is also getting this one, Resident Evil 2. So you can check that out. That's kind of interesting that it's getting, both services are getting that game on the same day. So Capcom's getting paid by both of them for that. So there you go for that. And the last one here, Those Who Remain on the 16th, as the lights go out. So let's see. As the horror game. Confront uncomfortable horrors, keep your sanity in check, and survive the night in the story-driven first-person psychological thriller. And so, yeah, that's the lineup there. I think the other thing I've seen for Game Pass is that that Pal World game, the Pokemon with guns game, is also going to be coming to Game Pass as it goes into early access this week on Friday, I think. So people can check that out. So yeah, there you go. Some nice stuff there. And then the Nintendo service, Nintendo Switch Online plus expansion pack is getting both Golden Sun games for the GBA app. Two Camelot RPGs that are well regarded. I did not really enjoy this game that much back in the day. Kind of felt very kind of boilerplate RPG kind of thing. As you are, instead of collecting Pokemon, you're collecting Jin. They're genie, like Pokemon equivalents. So there you go. That's stuff that's well regarded. People have been waiting on this because I think they, this is part of their announced list of GBA games that people have been waiting for. So they finally got those out. That'll be out on the 17th here on Wednesday, that is. So people with Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack can check those out. And so, yeah, we'll get to a couple bits of news here, and then we'll go to our games of the year. Xbox has the first showcase of the year. As they announced, their Developer Direct will be happening on January 18th. The games they are focusing on here... Let's see, Machine Games is going to show off their Indiana Jones game. probably get it titled, maybe find out it's out this year. I don't know. We'll see. Obsidian will show Avowed. So we'll see some more of that. See if it's... I think the first time we got gameplay last year, it kind of looked like what if you had a more action-focused Skyrim. Which isn't a bad thing, but it's also like, oh, so that's what that is. So there's that. Oxide Games will be showing off Ara History Untold. I think that's the kind of city builder. Or no, that's the strategy, civilization-style strategy game, I think. Historical grand strategy game, yeah. So there's that, and then we'll see some Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 from Ninja Theory, because that's supposed to be out this year, so we'll see more of that. And then, let's see, I assume they'll probably, like last year, drop something out at after this show, like they did with Hi-Fi Rush. That's what people are expecting, it seems like.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that'll be happening on January 18th on Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. So people can check that out and see what new stuff will be happening. Hopefully. Hopefully all these games will be out this year, and then that'll make for a more interesting 2024 for Xbox. So yeah, some stuff to keep an eye on there. And we'll get to the weirdest story of the week. The new Prince of Persia game, people have been reviewing it, and I think it's IGN that wrote an article being like, so we found something very weird. One of the NPCs in the game is voiced by a text-to-speech AI program, which I believe is something most games do. They have voice work, so there's like a filler until they get, you know, actual lines in. Closer to launch, you know, have the script done and all that, and kind of don't need to make as many changes to that stuff. But this seems like a case of Ubisoft and the developer kind of just working on the game and just forgot to get this role, this minor NPC assigned to the, you know, to be done at, by the voice company that they hired. It's like, whoa, this is a weird thing. So it seems like they will get voice work in there in an, you know, post-launch update, maybe in a few weeks, within the next few weeks. But yeah, for launch, there's going to be a character in there that's voiced by a text-to-speech program.
Yeah. For the record, I've been hearing good things about this game, apparently. Like, it's actually pretty good. It's just there's this one really weird bit that's just for whatever reason.
Yeah, that you're wondering, like, well, was this intentional to try and see if people would be fine with this in like a bigger budget game like this made by a big publisher? Or was this somehow just a weird mix up? That just one of these got left behind, but it's also like, I don't remember anything like this happening, you know, in the past, recent history. Like, you know, you kind of expect, especially games by big publishers, to kind of get all their, you know, T's crossed and I's dotted and all that before they launch. It seems like a bit of an oopsie there. Not something that ruins the game, I don't think, but definitely gets you thinking, like, how did somebody miss this? With all the people that work on, you know, these kind of games at Ubisoft. This seems like something should have been caught. So you don't have this kind of story out there as a kind of a negative story that's not... It's not like one that's going to cause, hopefully shouldn't cause anybody to get harassed at the developer, but you never know. Especially because this is only for the English version that has this small character that has only 8 lines. But the other languages, they are fully voiced. So it's like, oh, it's just the English version that's kind of weird. With this. So yeah, kind of the weirdest story of the week.
And then from the weirdest story to probably the saddest story of the week.
Yeah, the worst story of the week is that 2024 is starting off with more layoffs. Unity is the main company here with their new report that says they're cutting around 1,800 jobs, or about 25% of their employees, which is a hell of a lot, especially when we just finished 2023 with about 10,000 people getting laid off, 10 to 11,000, mm-hmm. and already getting about 20% of that happening in the first couple weeks here.
Mm-hmm.
That's very sad. Yeah, they're reducing, as I say here, we are reducing the number of things we're doing in order to focus on our core business and drive our long-term success and profitability. Their interim CEO wrote an internal memo that was sent to all employees last week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they've been obviously going through a lot after trying to change how they were doing fees for developers working on games with their engine.
Mm-hmm.
They had to go back on that as much as they were trying to stand pat with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Riccitiello left, and I've been dealing with all the you know, impact of that,
mm-hmm.
how that affected their business and all that. So, yeah. And they laid off a few hundred people last year as well. So that's not great news for this company or the industry in general, as the Unreal Engine continues to eat their business, eat at their business, and take a lot of companies work both from within and outside of the industry as they get a lot of you know, clients from the film and TV business kind of using the Unreal Engine for a lot of their CG work. So a lot of stuff going on here, and Unity's not doing super well right now.
Nope.
But yeah, you'll never see the execs take pay cuts as a result. So yeah, there's your bad news of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's get to something a little more positive, though I'll start this off with a little bit of negative as well.
Mm-hmm.
We put up our top 10 games of the year back on January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
The way we'll be doing this is kind of going through, Brandon and I will talk about our top 10 lists with from 10 all the way up to 1, and we'll tell you when those games are on our overall top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll start here with what I started off that staff page with, is that it would be disrespectful to talk about all of the good that happened this past year without talking about all the bad. Mostly the layoffs, where, you know, at least 10,000 people were laid off across various companies throughout this industry, going all the way from, you know, Xbox and PlayStation to Ubisoft and Riot and Epic Games, and pretty much any major company had layoffs, as well as a lot of smaller companies that shut down, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, that's kind of the thing that has to be said, that unfortunately a lot of the games that we enjoyed this year made by people that didn't always have the greatest of times, either post launch where layoffs happened or pre-launch where they had to crunch and all that along the way. So yeah, we send our hopes that, you know, people got to a better place, more stable jobs and whatnot since they got laid off. And you know, hopefully for the best, things will be better for 2024, but it doesn't seem like it so far.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's kind of the preface of all this. But yeah, let's start with our top 10 games of the year, and I'll let you start with your number 10, Brandon.
So my number 10 was, I can get it up. There we go. All right. So my number 10 for this year was Super Mario RPG, which was a remake of the original Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Salmon Stars. And the reason I picked this is because I absolutely adore the original Super Mario RPG. It was the first RPG that I ever was able to like play and finish. And that's because it took the sort of esoteric bits of RPG mechanics that can be very opaque to people who are just getting into the genre, and heavily simplified it in such a way that it became extreme. It was very easy to learn. Instead of having to go through like a list in order to pick a function, they just attached like attack and, you know, skill and run or whatever to just individual buttons on the controller, and it made it a lot easier to comprehend. But They also did a lot of stuff that actually makes the game better. They added a lot of quality of life upgrades, including a better saving system where you could basically pretty much save anywhere. It also gave a fast travel mechanic that wasn't in the original. And also just in general, the graphics were heavily upgraded and made this game look so much better than the original. And just in general, it made me relive all that stuff. And I'm glad that this game is now more readily available for, you know, the younger generations.
All right. Yeah. For my number 10, it was Star Wars Jedi Survivor, a game that had a rough launch performance wise. But I still enjoyed it a lot. And even kind of going back to some of these games to see if they belong to my list, I jump back into this and was like, oh yeah, this game is really fucking good. Mm-hmm. They take a lot of the stuff that worked with the original game, kind of don't do the Metroid thing of like, he's forgotten all of his abilities. You got to earn them again.
Yeah.
You keep most of those and then get new stuff along the way. And then they kind of just put you in bigger, more open areas so that you kind of turn a lot of the platforming mechanics that you had in the original and make this more of a 3D platformer of sorts, as you're kind of able to jump around, get on tops of buildings, and do all sorts of cool stuff to get around and take down enemies in fun new ways.
Yep.
That are really kind of inventive thing that you don't expect out of Star Wars games.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and also kind of letting you also embrace the dumb stuff here is like a lot of the stuff you get out of chests are collectible, like clothing items, or you know, you can buy like different kind of hairstyles and such for Cal, so you can have they'll have a trophy that is Cobra Kai themed, so that you know you do something with a big bandana around your head kind of thing. So yeah, they embrace the stupidity of that. You could have them, you know, wearing a mullet and beard and all that, and be like, embrace this like weird Jedi redneck kind of thing, or be clean and, you know, cut and proper like they do in the movies, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a fun game.
Yep.
Definitely one worth checking out if you want that. So yeah, go ahead with your number 9.
My number 9 was Hi-Fi Rush, the Xbox Series X and S, and also the PC. This was one of those games, like it was a game from Platinum that just, it came out with absolutely no fanfare whatsoever. They just put the game. Was it Platinum? I don't think it might have been. Tango Gameworks. Yeah. And it came out with absolutely zero fanfare, and it was just this amazing rhythm action game where it had this visual style that was heavily reminiscent of like Saturday morning cartoons. It had very goofy humor. Great character design, and the gameplay was just incredibly addictive. Though I'll be the first to admit, you know, and the best thing was everything in the game went by the rhythm of the music. Everything, the attacks, the graphics, everything, and they somehow managed to keep all of that together into like a cohesive whole. And also, it was just in general a really fun game. And honestly, it's no surprise this game became as popular as it did. And it's proof to show that sometimes when the quality is this good, you really don't need any kind of extensive advertisement to make it a hit. You know?
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. My number 9, Chia, for PlayStation and PC. This is one of those kind of indie darlings that came out earlier last year. I think it was in March or April.
Yeah.
One of those games that very clearly was influenced by Breath of the Wild, but set in their version of a real island called New Caledonia, that kind of pays homage to the culture and all that around there, but also has fun with that as you play a girl who kind of has this special ability that awakens where she can possess creatures around the island, birds and, you know, pigs and fish and such, as well as like inanimate objects.
Yep.
The screenshot I have here is one of a tree branch. Mm-hmm. You can just sit here and just roll around in a very dumb way. That's a viable way of getting around. You can also just get on a raft and just sail around. Just have a nice peaceful mm-hmm. time. A game that doesn't have much combat to it. There's a little bit to it. You have like little outpost stuff with these weird little paper creatures that you're going to have to burn away. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there's not really much combat to this game. It's kind of more focused on the exploration kind of aspects of these games. So mm-hmm. That's one people should definitely check out. They want something yeah. cool and kind of very approachable
mm-hmm.
for that. So yeah, it's my number 9.
Yeah.
And yeah. None of these games we mentioned so far are in our overall top 10. So I'll mention that stuff as we go.
Yeah.
So go ahead with your number 8.
My number 8 game was Pizza Tower, which was one of those like cult games that became this massive hit when it came out because of its just absolutely batshit insane visual style. Very reminiscent of like early to mid-90s Nickelodeon and like late and like mid-90s Cartoon Network. It's basically just you're a pizza chef at a pizzeria who is being threatened by a sentient pizza who's got a giant laser pointed at your pizzeria, and you got to stop him. You know, we're not talking like Shakespeare here, but it works. And it's not only got like really solid, like old school SNES style action platformer mechanics. It's also just really fun, and it's got an amazing soundtrack too. I will say, though, the last parts of each level where you've basically got to speed through them as fast as you can before the evil pizza kills you is some of the most stressful gaming I've ever encountered. But otherwise, yeah, a lot of fun. Loved it.
Yeah. So, yeah, there. My number 8 here is Cocoon.
Mm-hmm.
This is on pretty much everything. It is the new game from the puzzle designer that was at Playdead, working on mm-hmm. Limbo and Inside, that you can see all over this game as they kind of come up with this really kind of neat puzzle mechanic of you going into these orbs mm-hmm. To essentially solve puzzles. And along the way, you're kind of finding other orbs, and then you kind of are able to stash them in one another to mm-hmm. be able to carry them, because you only carry one orb at a time, but they find ways to make it easier to do that, and mm-hmm. it makes for some really kind of inventive puzzles, though I don't think there's anything here that's too tough as somebody that mm-hmm. loves puzzle games here, but they do a lot of fun and weird things with that, as you get like robots that can follow you around and carry the orbs and other ways of getting those things around. Around obstacles and all that kind of stuff, as well as they have a few boss fights in there that are pretty weird and kind of inventive mm-hmm. of the way that you do that stuff. So yeah, it's kind of one of those games, much like Limbo and Inside. It doesn't present you a story mm-hmm. at all. You kind of just glean things from the world as you're going around
mm-hmm.
and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just a very fun puzzle game that is well worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's my number 8 that is not on our overall list. So yeah. Go ahead with your number 7.
My number 7 was Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon. This was the first Armored Core game I'd ever actually played that was like an actual Armored Core game and not that incredibly crappy spinoff that came out a couple years ago. And like the thing about Armored Core games is there's a big part of like the overall gameplay is there's a lot of prep involved. You got to make sure you got the right equipment attached to your mech. You got to make sure you've got the right weapons and stuff that you're going to use, because when you're going out there, you're going to be going up against some serious challenges. What makes this game unique is that this is the first Armored Core game they've put out since From Software hit it big with the Souls series. And this, of course, is coming off like the success of Elden Ring. And you can see like a lot of the lessons they learned from those games put into this. You will encounter that, you know, like literally every enemy you encounter is going to be dangerous. So don't take any of them in, you know, for granted. And more than anything, all the bosses you encounter are just these enormous, incredibly intimidating machine enemies that are very hard to fight. I will say, though, the game isn't quite as hard as like those other games are, simply because, you know, you've got guns for one thing. But it's still very challenging. And also, I just really loved the like really dark sci-fi setting that they used for this. And yeah, it was just, it was good. I really liked it.
Yeah, that's a game where I played that first level, that first mission where you get the helicopter boss that just pissed me off so much I refused to play it, keep playing it even after I got past it. Until I did the video on our top 10, because that was our number 10 game of the year.
Yep.
That I was like, man, fuck this game. for doing that shit. But yeah, that worked out. I played the next one. I got saved mid-mission, so that's one of those From Software games where if you quit out, even though it saves constantly, if you do it the wrong way, it chides you the next time. So like, oh, you should have done it properly. Quit out to the main menu. It's like, man, you're saving all the time. Fuck off. But yeah, that one's not on my list, but that's our number 10 overall. My number 7 is Goodbye Volcano High. A narrative game that does a lot of fun stuff. Kind of gets the teenager humor, especially the modern teenage humor of being on social media and shit-talking.
Oh, yeah.
Shit-posting and all that kind of stuff. And the way that memes are done with that stuff, they kind of get that all very well done. In early part of the game, you're kind of doom-scrolling through social media stuff, and it's really fun to kind of pause and see what all is being said by these other people. But yeah, it is it's a game about the asteroid hitting the Earth, but from the perspective of these, you know, anthropomorphic dinosaurs who are very much just an analogy for humans dealing with climate change, the existential threat of these sort of high school seniors who have to try to live a normal life in society, even as they understand the dread of what's actually happening and that they're not allowed to like acknowledge this thing that could be happening. And how everybody deals with it in their own way. And along the way, you're a character in a band who's trying to win, you know, battle the bands thing. And you get to play some music through that, kind of a rhythm game thing, as well as dealing with a lot of, fun social interactions. There's some D&D stuff you get to do that I forget what they call it. It's like L&L. I forget what the actual name is, but you get to do some of that. It's just a very fun kind of game, and very much one that has two of its main characters are Muslim adjacent as far as their names are. They don't really talk too much about religion stuff here, but you got that, and you got some characters who are, you know, non-binary or gender fluid, stuff like that. So it's a very kind of progressive cast of characters. So yeah, there you go. That's number 7. So definitely worth checking out. So yeah, Brandon, what's your number 6?
My number 6 is Sea of Stars. And this was a game I only picked up recently because it was there was just so much other stuff to be played this year, as you'll see. But yeah, this was a Chrono Trigger throwback. It was made by the people behind The Messenger. It takes place like in the same universe, but much earlier. And it was it actually surprised me, like how all the, like, they it's not just a regular, like, top-down RPG. There's a lot of puzzle elements involved. There's a lot of, like, really meta humor involved. Some great character design. Some showing, you know, how these, how expressive, like, top-down graphics like this can be. And also just in general, it's really good. Like, what else can I say? It's legitimately an amazing game.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was what I played.
Yeah. Pretty good. One of those indie RPGs that, if you've paid attention to those kind of games, a lot of them try to change up the combat system. So they're not just your boilerplate, just hit X until you win kind of thing. So they add more mechanics to make it a more, at least mindfully interesting game. So that one's pretty solid, and it's on our list. Let's see, number 5 for that. So another one there. For me, my number 6 was Baldur's Gate 3. This is a game that I wish I had gotten more time into, but the time I did manage to get into this, like 15 hours, really enjoyed it as kind of a free-form RPG of sorts, where my desire to kind of look around every nook and cranny in games led to me kind of probably doing more in those 15 hours than most people would have experienced, as they kind of just probably progress through the main quest line kind of stuff. But at that point, I had pretty much every character I could get at that point, outside of, like, the demon lady, I think, was the next one I was going to be able to get. But, yeah, I, you know, have tons of potions, tons of crap on me. Not all of it useful, but, you know, you can sell that stuff for extra money to potentially buy more things. So, but you run into a lot of fun little stuff of, you know, finding these little side caves that have interesting stuff going on there that let you find, you know, back doors into other areas, that kind of stuff. And yeah, it makes for some fun ways to approach combat and all that kind of stuff, especially if you're one to save scum in that game. And so, yeah, that was my number 6. That's our number 2 overall game of the year. And definitely watch that video to see me fail a bunch of attacks in there, as I'm in the town that's taken over by the goblins, I think it is. That I'm in this underground area where there's these boxes that if you click on, have enemies that pop out of them, and they're assholes and will go break the other boxes and free their friends, kind of stuff. And yeah, that's a whole ball of wax I ran into, and then just completely fail on like 80% of the attacks I tried to use against them. And not like I'm trying to do attacks where I have like 40% chance of success. Some of these are like 60 to 70%, or it's like I probably should hit this more often, but this game is just telling me to fuck off. Which it does from time to time. So yeah, there you go, Baldur's Gate 3. So what's your number 5, Brandon?
My number 5 is Street Fighter 6, simply because after the just disaster that Street Fighter 5 was, just this being a solid, you know, game that was complete coming out in and of itself would have probably made this a top 10 game already. But the fact that they basically went back and decided to reinvent the wheel and making it so that newcomers can be just as, you know, challenging and you know, easy to get into the game as a veteran in and of itself is amazing. The fact that they also added a lot of like the world tour mode where you explore these various cities and stuff and goes more into the overall Street Fighter lore. You end up meeting up with characters I have not seen in years, like Carlos from Final Fight 3. No, I mean Final Fight 2, who is like a character in this game. Damed from the original Final Fight. He shows up. They just bring out all the stops in this game. And on top of that, it's really solid Street Fighter. They brought in a new cast of characters and a bunch of new fighters that I really quickly grew to really like playing. Marissa in particular. Just all in all, they managed to really knock it out of the park with this one. And you know, it made Street Fighter like actually relevant again, which is amazing. So yeah, that was my number 5.
Yeah, so Street Fighter 6 is our number 9 game on the list, on the overall list.
Yeah.
So there we go for that. Number 5, my number 5 is The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. This is a very good game that I enjoyed a lot. Played like 55 hours of it. Really enjoyed my time in the depths. I think it was my favorite part of the game, because it was kind of a reward for all the scouring I did for in caves for those light mushrooms and such that you can kind of throw around. in a way that you kind of just go around, go down there and find a bunch of bullshit and dumb enemies that you can take out pretty easily, and you get to ride the bone horses, all that kind of fun stuff. That's just kind of fun to explore those maps and find the big giant enemies you really shouldn't be dealing with. Those big giant like frog dudes that are gonna fuck you up. So yeah, maybe the one knock I had against it is that I wasn't a huge fan of the building stuff, of putting stuff together. I just did not enjoy fiddling around with that too much. Even when I got the ability to like save builds, that kind of stuff, that just was like, well, this came, you know, 40 hours after I was kind of tired of building out elaborate things.
Yeah.
I mostly just kind of did the bare minimum of stuff. Like, I'll put wings on this glider thing, because that'll make it easier to glide down this hill and, you know, launch off this cliff kind of thing. Especially when you get those things with the little tree dudes that you're trying to get to their place, because they have a dumb heavy backpack. So they need you to carry them around. It's like, well, I tried to get them down a river and that fucked up and they drowned and I had to start over again. It's like, all right, I'll just fucking carry you, because it's that's easier than building some elaborate thing, a bridge or something. So yeah, as a game, it's got a lot of good stuff from Breath of the Wild, but I really liked Breath of the Wild's world. That was kind of more chill to it, even with some of the hot areas around the castle that you know, you got those big laser dudes running around, the guardians fucking things up. But I really like the kind of exploration in that game. This one's still very good. Just kind of had a little bit too much going on for me, but I still enjoyed it. We'll probably get back to it here this year to finish it up and explore more of that map.
Yep.
So yeah, that is our number one game of the year.
Yep. That does not surprise me.
Yeah. So yeah, go ahead with your number four.
And my number four was Super Mario Wonder. That was, like, I've already talked a bunch about this game, about how it's literally the best Mario game since Odyssey. It's this, they went back and once again managed to reinvent the 2.5D, you know, Mario platformer into something new. They basically went all in on the whole idea of, you know what, shit's wacky, let's just make it wacky for the sake of wacky. And that's exactly what you get. Pipes turn into worms, you end up getting elongated sometimes. There's a lot of weird musical shit. There's like the freaking piranha plants come out of the, you know, start coming out of the pipes and humming show tunes and crap. It's like, it's amazing. What else can I say? It's just a ton of fun.
Yeah. Very good game.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one of those games where I played for a good bit, got to like the third world, and I just never came back. And I was like, oh, I didn't come back to it, so it's maybe not one that should be on my list here. But on the staff list is our number four game.
Yep.
For that. So my number four is Chants of Sinnar. That's chants, like, you know, chanting. And Sinnar is S-E-N-N-A-A-R. Bit of a weird word, but this is a great kind of puzzle game that was the one that kind of really stuck its claws in me, as it's a game about deciphering languages that your character, for whatever reason, does not understand at all. So you have to kind of gleam meanings from the words as people, as these glyphs, as they are spoken to you, or you see them on signs or, you know, artwork and whatnot, statues, all that kind of stuff. And you're able to jot down, like, here's what I'm gathering from the way this person's gesturing while they're saying this. You know, likely the first thing they say to you is probably greeting, so that might be the first thing you're seeing. But, you know, gleaming from them, like, pointing at other areas, like, oh, maybe they're saying to help them somewhere else, or, you know, do all this. You can kind of write down notes as like what this, what you think this means. And then as you go, you have a journal of that will fill out pages of, you know, gestures or objects or whatever that it wants you to put these glyphs on. And so you use your notes to be like, okay, this seems to be what this is, you know, lay them out. When you get them all right on that page, it'll tell you exactly what that means. And then from then on, as you see those glyphs, it'll denote that stuff on those signs or dialogue or whatever it is in a really, really fun and engaging way, especially as you kind of decipher the different languages. I think there's six in there. I've gotten through four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all different in the way they do things. And like the first one, you'll notice like, oh, these glyphs all have similar designs to them. So they must be related. And then you figure out like, oh, okay, these are talking about different types of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or this relates to maybe different types of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of stuff. And then you get to others where they're like, all right, this is more action oriented kind of stuff, maybe more blunt in the way they do things. And I think the third or the fourth one's kind of more looking like Arabic kind of thing. So I get that they're kind of probably layering on some real world type stuff, though probably it's probably not straight Arabic, but it's probably heavily influenced by that. So there's a lot of interesting stuff there. It's a very fun kind of puzzle game. Maybe the only knock I have against it is that it's also an adventure game, so you're occasionally having to pick up objects and carry them around, and sometimes while I'm doing stuff, I don't figure out that stuff super well.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe occasionally run into some stealth sections, which are all pretty simple for the most part, but you don't really get punished for anything.
Mm-hmm.
You just sort of restart the area you're in kind of thing, but I've had to look up like one thing. There's like, oh, I'm supposed to, ring these bells in a certain way, but I didn't gather how I was supposed to do that until I ended up looking it up. Like, oh, okay, I just figured this. I didn't realize this thing about it, but yeah, that was my favorite puzzle game of the year, Chance of Sinnar. So that's one people should check out. It's on everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my number four. So what's your number three, Brandon?
My number three was Alan Wake 2. I loved the original Alan Wake. Well, specifically, I loved the remastered version that came out for PS4 because I did not play the original back when it came out on Xbox. But yeah, they managed to put it's Remedy, and Remedy always puts a lot of love into their games. Sometimes that means that you're going to come across some just sheer batshit insanity, but other times it's just incredibly inspired. I loved the fact that they basically divided this game up into having two different protagonists. Obviously Alan is still like one of them, but you spend a lot of it playing, FBI agent named Saga Anderson, investigating a series of serial killings that lead her to Bright Falls, which is where Alan the Wake gang came to, and we find out a little bit of like what's been going on since Wake disappeared and stuff, and just this weird way of like fiction and reality start encircling each other. And I will give the game this. Unlike the first game, this game, the combat is a lot less stressful. But that also might be because I played it on a slightly easier difficulty than I did the first go around. That said, though, the combat was actually like felt like good and fun to play this time, whereas in the original, it was just a frantic exercise in almost futility. And just the amount of detail that they put in the overworld in this game, all the stuff you could encounter. It was legitimately an amazing game. I can't go into it more than that because there is so much stuff that I could so easily spoil. Loved it.
Yeah. Alan Wake 2 is our number three overall game.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to see which ones we have or haven't mentioned yet. Okay, we've got a few more here. But yeah, the video on that one, I picked it up on PS5.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see spoiler-free, just like the first like 10, 15, 20 minutes of that game,
mm-hmm.
You can do that with me not having any way of explaining anything about the game because I don't know anything.
Mm.
You can check that out. I have not gone back to it yet, but
Mm-hmm.
I definitely put it on easy and also put on that nude option, turned that off so you didn't see the large man's dong at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Puts very dirty tidy whities on him.
Yep.
I was like, all right, this is decent enough for a video.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you see ass right at the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And not like sexy ass.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. Let's see. My number three was Pikmin 4 for the Switch.
Mm.
A game that was my most played Switch game. Put like 60 hours into it.
Mm-hmm.
Beat it. Beat all of the content in it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't necessarily like get the highest levels on, you know, the platinum rewards for the challenges in it, but I did everything else, got all the items and all that. Everything you could do in that game, and really enjoyed it, in spite of some of my gripes that the lock-on is kind of annoying at times, as it's, they like to put, in some areas, multiple things in the same area, so that as you try to lock on one thing, it just switches over to another as you're throwing Pikmin, and so you can accidentally like, throw them in the water and kill them. All that kind of stuff when it's, you know, absolutely not your fault for that, other than just not, you know, thinking that they would fuck you over like this. But otherwise, that game is very chill, very enjoyable as you, you know, gather tons of these Pikmin, all of the 8 types that they have, though they keep like 2 of them even until you beat the campaign proper. Then they open up more of the game, and then you get the last 2, as well as a bunch more content, an extra map or 2, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's the best of the series so far, and just a very fun kind of chill experience as you kind of go through, and you don't have any time pressure. You're not like, you know, have like 30 days to complete like the original game did, or you know, have some limit to it other than just how much time you're allowed to do stuff in one day. But other than that, it's pretty chill about everything else, and just makes for a very fun game that was kind of the most enjoyable thing I played on the Switch for that. Accentuated by when I beat this game, I went back to Pikmin 1, the remaster on the Switch, where I left off and was like, how the fuck did I ever play this game without a lock on, just having a lot of trouble just jumping into the middle part of that game where I was like, oh, this game has ruined me for the other 2 games, the first 2 games there. So yeah, that's kind of how at least some of the quality of life stuff they've done there, though I would have liked some more accessibility stuff, because they let you map certain parts of the menu to your D-pad, but not everything that you can access in the menu. So there's like things I would have allowed to be put on there that they didn't, that kind of stuff. But yeah, very good game. Definitely worth checking out. Probably the most underrated game on the Switch. Just looking at the games that people talk about constantly on the Switch, Pikmin 4 is maybe even better than all of them, but not many people pay attention to this, you know, pseudo RTS game that Nintendo put out last year. Versus, you know, the new Zelda or Mario game or Mario RPG or, you know, that kind of stuff that they put out last year. But yeah, there you go. That's my number 3. So, Brandon, what about your number 2?
My number 2 was The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. And honestly, this game was almost in the running for my game of the year. And it was in my running for game of the year until, you know, my actual game of the year came along. I loved Breath of the Wild. I loved how it completely, in some ways, managed to reinvent the Zelda formula, but at the same time managed to bring it all the way back to like the roots of the original Zelda game. This sort of just wide open space where you can just basically go anywhere and pretty much do anything in any sort of order that you wanted to. The only thing that was limiting you were the challenges in front of you. And it was interesting sort of seeing this like sort of post-apocalyptic version of Hyrule where it's slowly rebuilding itself after, you know, the calamity and everything. And this game, you know, takes place a couple years after that. So you know, like Hyrule and the individual places, they're all starting to rebuild and expand outwards, and they've got like camps and little colonies everywhere. They're real rebuilt. They're building new towns. Technology is starting to advance because they sort of took advantage of like all the leftover robots and stuff. But then there was like the lore expanse, like finding out about, you know, where the Hylians come from, what the origins of Hyrule are, getting to meet, Rauru, the original founder of Hyrule, and his queen, and all this other stuff. But what was really sort of the star for me was how they added this creative mechanic into it, the Ultra Hand, where you could do everything from like, yeah, you could take this little boulder and put it over here and that'll be a makeshift platform, to, hey, let's build a tank with cannons. You know, that in and of itself was just, the possibilities were almost endless. And that's kind of what made this game just, it almost very replayable to me. Obviously, it's not perfect. You know, if you don't like the whole like degradation mechanic that happened in the first game, you know, the Ultra Hand being able to like attach stuff to weapons kind of helps solve it, but not really. And, you know, there's still like some pop-up issues here and there. And yet the sheer scope of the game, it's amazing that my Switch didn't just straight up catch on fire with the amount of stuff they were able to put into this game. Yeah, just in general, it was fantastic. Just a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I forgot about the sign guy, the dumbest character in the entire game.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's Nintendo humor, yeah. You know?
Well, it's like, brother, just put the sign down and then build the other side to it.
Yeah.
Don't sit here and hold it up waiting for a dumb elf to come help you.
Yeah.
Put a rock on it and a stick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just put it down, man. He's not smart. Mm-hmm. That's why they gave him that job. Like, you go hold these signs up and wait for a random person to come by and help you mm-hmm. finish them. Instead of, you know, putting it down on the ground and finishing it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that, as I said before, that's our number one game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
My number two is Dredge, which mm-hmm. is on everything. This is my top indie game of the year, and it's mm-hmm. a very weird game in mm-hmm. the way it's constructed. It's a fishing game, but it has a dark undercurrent to it that you should be able to get right away is probably mm-hmm. some Cthulhu thing going on here with this area of these five islands that are experiencing a lot of weird stuff at night,
mm-hmm.
As well as sometimes during the day with the very kind of spooky creatures that show up in some of these areas and the weird stuff that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then along the way, you're catching these fish and selling them to people who have, you know, been affected by the influence of the old ones. You can tell from some of these people
mm-hmm.
and others who have recognized this and tried to shut themselves off from all this and try to avoid it as much as possible because they know the danger of what's affecting other people, that kind of stuff. And along the way, you're catching fish, and then you get the aberrant fish that are the mutated forms.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all the, if you in the little fishing encyclopedia, you can see like the descriptions of, oh, this is a fish that's one of these fish that has just a bunch of human teeth in it, and they're just endless rows of teeth, and it's the creepiest description of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The weird ways that these fish have been mutated in very creepy and scary ways that are just fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, it's also chill because you are just fishing around, grabbing stuff, trying to solve some of these quests that you get from people mm-hmm. That they give you and doing all this kind of stuff. And then, yeah, kind of run into all the weird shit that happens and
mm-hmm.
The occasional times you're staying out past night and seeing all the weird stuff that happens then and mm-hmm. how that affects your sanity, and that adds like these further obstacles in the water as you're trying to get to the safe place to get some sleep and kind of save yourself. And then, yeah. And then they added some DLC that adds a big ice island to the south of everything. That adds some more weird shit that happens, as well as a new class of items to add your ship to catch ice fish, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole weird thing. And the way they explain how this just showed up is that you just tape a picture of the island, like a drawing of the island to your map, instead of just being like, oh, this showed up somehow. So it's like, oh, no, this showed up, but it's also just a thing that was taped to your map. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being, oh, we just didn't show you the map, the full map of this area. And that's where you're dealing with a weird a narwhal, as they call it, but it's like a big giant walrus meets a narwhal meets a monster. And it's all fucked up when it chases after you.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to do some neat stuff to kind of feed it and get it to fuck off for a day kind of stuff. But yeah, Dredge, very good game, very fun, and kind of has a very good loop where I end up kind of just upgrading my ship as much as possible before I even really get close to finishing all the quests. So I end up having less to do with that stuff before, you know, I have to, because you have to outfit your ship with different equipment to fish at different like depths of the sea, as they have them all laid out. So you occasionally have to change that stuff out over time. So that's a very fun mechanic of dealing with all that. So yeah, that's my number two, and it's our number eight overall game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's only going to be one game on here that we don't have on either of our list.
Yeah.
We'll talk a bit about that one afterwards, but Brandon, what's your number one game of the year?
It's pretty much everybody else's game of the year. Baldur's Gate 3. There really was no contest this year. This game was so good that it made every other game seem lesser in comparison to it. This is the only game I have ever encountered in the modern era that is impossible to spoil simply because no single playthrough is alike to the other one. That is, do you realize just how much work has to go into a game that you can actually do something like that? Like, even now, this game's been out for months now, and people are still finding new stuff in it that you can do. You know, Larian was so thorough in, you know, the design of this game that there are still things people did not realize that you could actually do in this game, and the game will react to it naturally. You know, that is insane. It's also proof that with enough love and development time, you know, your game doesn't have to look like, you know, it's 100% realistic. Like, it's, you know, like, don't get me wrong, the graphics in this game are pretty good, but they're also not mind-blowing either. It's just the sheer quality of it that overcomes pretty much any issue that it has. This game, when it first came out, was very glitchy. It had a lot of glitches, but nobody cared because all the good stuff about this game overshadowed any, you know, possible flaw that this game did. This is a once in a lifetime type game that comes out, and it's that good. And honestly, there was no contest for this being my game of the year.
Yeah,
really just none. I'm probably going to go back to this game sometime soon, and I almost never replay RPGs. So
yeah, they've been adding more story content to it.
They've been adding more material to it since this game came out. So
yeah, and even fixing some things where, like, you have to make decisions about certain characters you can recruit, and like, all right, fine, we'll let you recruit them either way.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, so you can have a little more freedom even then for that stuff. But yeah, I don't know if they're going to add any big expansions or anything, but they seem like they're going to keep adding some more stuff, especially to the third act there. But yeah. As a reminder, that's our number two game of the year, Baldur's Gate 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get to my number one, which is Marvel's Spider-Man 2.
Yep.
My list is full of open world games. This past year was a very good year for that, with Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Chia, You could say Baldur's Gate 3 a little bit, but maybe not. But there's Tears of the Kingdom. I have Dredge. That's a big open world. And Spider-Man 2. And Spider-Man 2 was the most fun of them all to traverse kind of the, I would say, the first game that has topped Just Cause 2 and 3 for their kind of fast and fun ways to explore big areas. And include some of the same ways with a big, like, you know, wingsuit kind of thing that they call, I think I wrote down here, the, I forget what they call it, like web wings, something like that. That is their thing. But they've also made a much faster game. It's like, in the course of playing this, I played some of the original, the Spider-Man remastered on PS5. And it's like, holy shit, this game, they definitely made it a lot faster, because in that game, you move pretty fast for what you're doing. But here, a lot of the upgrades you get are to make the swinging a lot faster, your ability to get around the wings. They added slingshots on top of buildings, and you have your own ways of, like, swinging off the lights and all that kind of stuff to get around fast. And it just makes it such a fun world to explore. And even though you have the two big chunks of the map that could maybe get you to fast travel more, I really rarely ever do it, because it's just kind of fun to get around, and you run into other things to do along the way, because they have a bunch of chests for tokens that you can find. You can do crimes, because it's not required to 100% any of the districts anymore, so you do that to get some of the tokens for upgrade stuff. As well as the way that the open world stuff, the events kind of evolve over time as you go through the story, that makes it kind of feel like a living world of sorts. Because initially, some of the people you fight are just this weird fire cult, and then that evolves into a whole side thing that you're doing involving a certain character, and then the bad guys turn into in the random crimes into these just generic bad guys. And then once Kraven shows up, then you see a lot of Hunter stuff showing up in there. And then, you know, kind of just keeps evolving as you go to make it a kind of game that really tries to fight the kind of tedious nature that these kind of games can have. And yeah, it's just been a lot of fun kind of jumping around and doing that stuff. And it does a really good job of getting a lot of good small moments where you playing as Miles, and there's this quest line you do around this history museum of black music from Brooklyn, Brooklyn and Queens and such, of the local area of that stuff. And it's like features real musicians and all that. And you get to go explore it and, like, learn more about this in a way that's like, oh, this is really cool. Kind of, underscores the communal aspect of the Spider-Man character as Miles or Peter, where they're trying to help keep the communities safe and happy, to celebrate them and lift them up and all that kind of stuff. That's was a very cool part of the Miles Morales game, and that kind of keeps going here. That just makes for such a fun experience. Fun story, all that kind of stuff, as Peter and Miles kind of continue to deal with the chaos that is their attempt to be normal people as well as superheroes. That is just their cross to bear as being superheroes, that they sacrifice their abilities to have a normal life. Because, like, you know, the beginning of the game, Peter's starting a new job as a teacher and then destroys that immediately. To save the city. And, you know, can't blow his cover to explain that away amidst all the chaos that is happening. And so, yeah, it's just, it's such a fun game. I still keep jumping into it to do more stuff for that. So, yeah, that's it's a very good game. My number one game of the year. And that is our number six game of the year. So you want to see me do some fun stuff there. This video for that. The only game on here that is not on either of our lists is Final Fantasy 16. That is number seven, which was a big one on Danreb's list and a couple others. I did the video for that. That's a very fun kind of open world RPG thing that's, you know, like a Final Fantasy game does. It focuses heavily on story and all that, but has a very fun combat system, which comes with the combat designer that did the most recent Devil May Cry game.
Yep.
Working on this, so you kind of get a lot of that aspect to it, as well as a mix of some of the stuff that they do in the God of War games, the recent ones, that heavily influenced that game as well. So, yeah, that was a cool game. Just one I played like 20, 30 hours and kind of took a break from, because it's one of those games where I could sit there and do a bunch of side quests, but you know, you extend the length of that game longer and longer as long as you do that stuff. So. But yeah, that's the number 7 game. So yeah, I'll recap the overall top 10 here. Number 10, Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. Number 9, Street Fighter 6. Mm-hmm. 8 is Dredge. 7 is Final Fantasy 16. 6 is Marvel Spider-Man 2. 5 is Sea of Stars.
Mm-hmm.
4 is Super Mario Brothers Wonder. Mm. 3 is Alan Wake 2.
Yep.
2 is Baldur's Gate 3. And number 1 is Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm.
Very good list of games.
Yep.
I kind of note here, there's 4 exclusives to a platform. 2 for the PS5, 2 for the Switch. There's 4 that are exclusive to the current gen. I think that's, yes, Final Fantasy 16, the Spider-Man 2, Alan Wake 2, and Baldur's Gate 3.
Mm.
And then we got 2 indies on here, Sea of Stars and Dredge. And Dredge is the only original game here.
Mm-hmm.
The Sea of Stars is a prequel to The Messenger.
Yeah.
So while it's, you know, original in its spirit, but it's not. It's essentially a sequel / prequel there. Just in a way that you wouldn't expect, because it's not that directly tied to it.
Nope.
We're like, this thing happened ages ago. Mm-hmm. Gameplay-wise, it's completely different from what you played in The Messenger.
Yep.
But yeah, that's the list there. Very good list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This 2023 was actually a really good year for gaming.
Well, yeah.
Games specifically. Obviously, the industry had just a shit ton of issues that came out in public. But the actual products were really solid. We had some really good... This was legitimately hard to put together this year. Not because of a lack of good games, but just the dearth of good games that we had.
Yeah.
You know, just so many of them.
Yeah. That is definitely true. And it looks like 2024 is going to be pretty good in its own right here with the first few months. Got some big games coming out.
Oh, yeah.
As I said, we have Prince of Persia this week.
Yep.
As well as another Code Recollection and The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered are all out this week.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely fun to see.
So, yeah, there's some other pretty solid titles coming out this month as well. You know, so yeah, January and February are actually like not dead. Like that's not a thing we have to worry about anymore.
Yeah, it's a fun thing. So yeah, got some good stuff here over the next couple of weeks and a few months. So. We'll keep an eye on that stuff. But yeah, that's going to do it for the first show of the year. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and such to talk about. As things start to open up, we'll see exactly what's in that Developer Direct that Xbox is doing. And probably have a little bit to talk about with The Last of Us and Prince of Persia.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be back next week to do all that. Thank you, Brandon, for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out and select strangers that are also hopeful for a great year ahead. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.